Throughout all of history, they've only talked about the fame, never the hard work, never the elbow grease, never the early call time.
Good morning, early call timers.
Good morning.
How are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm good as well. We're here with script supervisor Kelly Marino. This is so exciting.
Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning, guys.
We've never had a script supervisor on our show.
No, you're our first one.
What the hell is a script supervisor?
Oh my God, what is a script supervisor? Okay, so we are the people that sit at Video Village next to the director, and we help them put their show together, and we're kind of like the liaison between the set and the editing room. And it varies between television and commercials and movies on what my job responsibilities are. But essentially, at the base of everything, we do continuity. We make sure the actors say the lines that are written on the page. We take notes on everything that we shoot, and then we give those notes to the editor, and then that helps them put the pieces together at the end to make the movie.
I would like to compliment you right now and just say that you're the best script supervisor I have ever worked with, and I've only worked with you on one project. You're very organized, and I appreciate you.
Oh, well, thank you.
No problem.
You were made like the, I don't know, the Stitch expert or whatever on Stitchers, because Jeff was just like, she gets the final say on what happens on set for everything.
What did he make me? He made me the vice president of not moving on. I think that was officially my title.
Because you wanted to get stuff. We wanted to get coverage.
Because there were shots that I needed, or I knew that Jeff would want something, a different kind of performance or a different level from an actor, or just to make sure that like we had enough to do. Yeah, and if I didn't think that a shot was good enough, or if I didn't think that we had enough coverage, yeah, I was the vice president of not moving on.
Who's the president?
Probably Jeff.
Oh, Jeff. Okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
So you almost, in a sense, work kind of like a director, in a sense, with the director.
I would say that I'm kind of like their second pair of eyes. I'm the director's second pair of eyes. I'm also the writer's and producer's second pair of eyes, and the editor's second pair of eyes. I'm kind of an insurance policy, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's very true.
That's like 10 eyeballs.
Yeah. I don't know. People keep calling me Eagle Eye. Maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. But yeah, we're, you know, like I said, it varies between TV and movies. With a director on a movie, the director has a lot more say, as well as the producers. And so there's things that I can bring up for a producer and director on a movie that I would go to a writer instead on a television show and ask them questions about certain things. And that just is, that's just part of the differences between working in television and working in movies. Because on the TV show that I'm currently on, I have to go to my executive producers and my writers all the time before I go to the director sometimes on certain things. But if it's about shots and it's about the style of a shot, then I deal with the director and the DP. Mm-hmm. But really, yeah, I'm there to help. I'm there to help and make sure that we get everything that we need, and we still stay continuous within the style of what we're doing as well, not just within the actor's continuity or the just the dialogue.
Gotcha. How? Because I'm always thinking about continuity as an editor, and like, okay, well, he grabbed it with his left hand, and the next take he grabbed it with his right. Are you on them immediately and say, Hey, you did that wrong? Or do you just make a note that he grabbed it wrong on this take? Or
I will usually get on them about it, and then it depends on, I guess, what the shot is. If it's a medium shot and then we're going to go into coverage, you know, and if I'm not going to see it, then I know not to worry. But if it is a shot that I definitely know we're going to cut to the other side of that we need it, I will go in and say, hey, guys, try to do this again with this hand. And sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. And then that's when I make notes for the editors, like, okay, grabbed it with the right hand here, left hand here, left hand here. And then I go to the actor when we turn around and say, hey, let's try to match this one because the director liked this, so do it with this hand. And you know, for the most part, it works out, but sometimes in the edit, as you know, the better performance is the wrong one for continuity.
Yes.
I did a shot the other day that I looked at one of my actors and I was like, don't forget your prop when you, because we had to like open a door and then close a door and open a door. And on the second open of the door, the prop needed to be in his hand because it was a time cut. And he, I was like, don't forget your prop. And he's like, okay. And of course he did. then I watched the cut of the show and I was like, out of the four takes, that was the one that had to be used, the one where he didn't have his prop.
Of course.
Because I fixed it for the other takes that were afterwards. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes in the edit, I don't get a choice because you guys need performance. And that's what's going to work.
Yeah.
How many like different elements are going on in any given shot where you're like, I have to pay attention to this, like, six different things that need to match from take to take? Or does it just vary? I'm sure it varies, but
I would say, you know, shot sizes are one, but I really rely on my DP and my camera ops to work with that. But once in a while I have to watch shot sizes. Anytime that they have props or anything that they touch, I always want to make sure that's there. Also just getting up, sitting down, leaning back in a chair, leaning forward in a chair, which way they turn, just their general movements. That way the big pieces are there to cut with. And I would think maybe those are it. Maybe those are like the big ones that I always have to watch for. And then also once in a while, you know, when we're doing dialogue and improv and or just levels, like we have to make sure we get all the levels that match on the other side for the actors. Making sure that we get a really energetic one or one that's a little bit more subdued or somewhere in the middle. And we always have to make sure that we get those matching ones if we're not doing cross coverage.
Right. Oh, okay. So you oversee kind of a tone to a lot of the scenes too.
Right.
Like make sure that they match on both sides.
Yeah. I have to make sure that we have enough to make that kind of continuity go together too. Now, again, that's something I rely on the director to do for me, is to work with me as well. And know that if we have an alt line, do we need to get the reaction to the alt line, even if it doesn't affect what the dialogue is?
Yeah.
Like, do we have that reaction? Would it change anything?
Some people think that improv is easy, and it's like, no, you improv, and then you have to fix it on the other side too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people don't. Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I've worked on a number of projects where they, we got the improv on one side. I'm like, well, there's no reaction on the other side, and it looks silly. And
yeah, and I think that's working in single cam shows. Like I tend to do, we don't do a ton of cross coverage, but once in a while, when it's a scene that is going to have a lot of improv or just a lot of reactions, the director will fight for some cross coverage. That way, we can just grab it in the moment. But, you know, shows like, I think, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, they are a single cam show, essentially. Like, they're not multi-cam sitcom, but they have three cameras that only do one setup, so they get all the cross coverage they want, and that's it. But on shows that I work on, it's not quite like that, and we do turn around on people and have to get those matching things.
Right.
I would think for comedy, I guess that makes more sense, because you're working with people that are used to improvising lines and coming up with alts for things, and it seems like it would take forever if you were going to have to turn around every time and, oh, well, I got another one. This is the funniest one yet. Oh, well, we already got it. We're moving on. Like, it's kind of...
Right, yeah. Keeping track of all of that stuff is a lot, and, you know, we do the best we can, and luckily, especially on TV, the writers are there a lot, so they are also, like, another double check. There's, you know, we have tons of checks and balances at Video Village, which is fantastic.
What show are you on now?
I'm doing a show called The Real O'Neills for ABC. It's a mid-season replacement show, so it'll be out, I think, in January, but it might be a little bit later. It'll be on Tuesdays on ABC at 8:30.
I'll be shameless watching. Plug.
It's nice. Cool.
Not shameless. It's a great show. It's a great show. It's really funny. It's a good show. I would highly recommend watching it.
Is it it's a comedy?
Yes, it's a comedy. It's nice. About a boy. It's a Midwestern Catholic family, and the middle child is coming out as gay, and the parents are going through a divorce, hilarity ensues. Nice. Right?
Yeah.
Right.
So who's on that?
Martha Plimpton plays the mother.
Oh, cool.
And Jay Ferguson plays the father, and he was in Mad Men. He had a really big beard in Mad Men.
Yeah.
And then the kids are all fantastic as well. Matt Shively is the older brother. Noah Galvin plays the middle child who comes out gay. And Bebe Wood is the youngest kid. And she used to be on The New Normal as the little girl. They're all fantastic. They're super, super fantastic.
Do you like doing a comedy over a drama? Or does it just vary?
I like both, to be honest. You know, everything's different. It's why I work in movies and TV and commercials, is because it's all different. There's something new to do every day. Even though it's like the same paperwork, yeah, and kind of the same deal every day, it's also different. So I don't have a preference one way or the other.
Well, that's good.
That's good to know.
I know last week we were supposed to record earlier, and you had a commercial that you did. What was that commercial, if you can say?
Yeah, no, I was, a friend of mine needed me to go in for a day on a commercial for her. So it was for DirecTV, and they were doing, it's a 12-day shoot, and they're doing a number of spots within that 12 days. And so we were taking care of part of one of the spots for DirecTV.
Okay.
And when you work in commercials as a script supervisor, they do so much pre-production work and have the storyboards there, and you have the client there all the time, that really my job is to make sure the continuity is there, and really make sure that we have all of the matching storyboards that we need, and we're telling the story in the most effective way. But there's a lot of other people that have a lot more say. So working in a commercial isn't always the same kind of challenge that you get when you work in television or movies in the realm of being a script supervisor. It's a different world. It's a very different world. Different skills, but just a different application of skills, I guess, is how I would describe it, going from commercial to TV and film.
Do you have like the executives from the company that is, you know, essentially paid for the commercial? Are they on set? Like the guys from Honda are here, whatever.
Yes, the clients are definitely there. And there's always a lot of them. And then there's a lot of people at the agency as well. And they all sit together and they watch it. And then the directors have to confer with them before we move on, make sure that they get all of the different levels that they need in the performances. I mean, I did a commercial once where I watched them rearrange three cars for an hour. because the client wanted it very specifically done, and that's what it was. So
that's interesting.
So there's a lot of very particular, specific things that have to go into making a commercial, and the client and the producers do a lot of that work. So my job is just very different on it. I prefer TV, just because I enjoy the pace of it. I like getting a new script every week and a new director every week. But still getting to keep continuity of an entire show.
Right.
Which is what I really enjoy.
What's kind of the arc? Because I know for your job, like, you'll come to the table read and you'll time out the episode. So what exactly is that? And then moving forward until the end of an episode shoots, like, what are your responsibilities?
Sometimes I get asked to pre-time a script, which means that I'll sit at home by myself and read the script out loud, and sometimes have to act it out if I need to figure out how long things, look like a crazy person, so I do it at home.
Do it at a coffee shop or something. What the hell is she doing?
So sometimes I do the pre-timing of the script just so the directors or producers have a general idea of what we're going to be running at, ideally. Mm-hmm. Then we'll do table reads, and I'll go to those and do the timing of that so we get an idea of what it sounds like with the actors. But, of course, they're not acting things out. You know, there's not big explosions that we're accounting for and things.
True.
I'll go to those table reads. When I do get to go to a production meeting, which are usually few and far between on television because I'm usually filming, I'm there with my breakdown. I do a breakdown of the show and do the day and night breakdown and also confer page counts with the ADs. And then I distribute my breakdown of everything that's happening in the show and all of my notes and, you know, prop continuity notes or makeup or any kind of thing that would be something from one scene to the next to the next to the next that we don't shoot in order. Any of those notes go in my breakdown as well. And then when we do the production meeting, that's my opportunity to ask all my questions, make sure I have a final say. And then we, then I distribute that to hair, makeup, and wardrobe and anyone else who really wants it. I've had actors actually ask for my breakdowns before because I color code them.
Okay.
And that helps just kind of this day, everything happens in on the red day. Like, and it just helps them, I guess, mentally kind of figure out where they're supposed to be at too. That's one of the reasons I do it. And then, so after that, then we go to production and filming, and I do all of my stuff on the show.
Right.
Which means doing a progress report every day for the production, so they know what we've shot, what camera rolls and sound rolls we've been using, how many pages we've done, how many scenes we've done, if we've done wild track for the day. If we've got added shots of, you know, a bird flying, because we might need that at some point, but it doesn't really go anywhere in the script. It's kind of like the general report of everything that we did for the day. And then, you know, we'll shoot everything, and that's when I do all of my normal continuity and giving actors dialogue and running dialogue with them and making sure that we have all the shots, because my favorite thing is when a director shows up and has a shot list for me. Which doesn't always happen, but when I have a shot list, I can see it, look at it, get the idea of what we're doing, make any suggestions if I think we need a shot of something, and then we shoot that. And then by the end of the day, my job is to take all of my notes and put them in order for the editors to grab at the end of the day. So I do an edit log, which is everything in order that we shot. And then I do a second group of notes that's the facing pages for the script. And they're the pages that have all of the notes for whatever is happening on that one script page.
So they, for the people at home following along, the facing page is on the left-hand side. So when the editor is looking at the script, they can see the notes on the left-hand side.
Okay.
And the script is on the right-hand side.
And JJ, maybe you can talk about like how you use my notes, because I think maybe people don't understand that, you know, I'm not just keeping track of clips or how many takes we do. There's also other things that you utilize it for.
Yeah, a lot of times circle takes are really helpful.
What is that?
Circle takes are usually, well, back in film... In the film days.
I love film.
I know you do.
I love film.
All right. We love film.
Processing film was very expensive. So the director would say, oh, I want to print that. I want to print that. So those would be the circle takes. Nowadays, if you have a lot of footage, all you can really watch are the circle takes.
Mm-hmm.
So those were really helpful. It's also nice to know when a scene is... there's a reset in the scene, which you'll usually note.
Right.
Or if it was a completed take, or if it was a...
Reset meaning we were halfway through it, something happened, and we had to start over.
Or they just kept rolling, and then they reset the whole scene.
Okay.
So let's say you go through it twice, and then it's noted. Let's see. Knowing what cameras are being shot on what setups, sometimes... you'll want to know, okay, well, is this one B only or is this one A only, or all that information is on there, which is crazy because there's so much organization involved in doing it. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do it. My head would explode.
And it's so interesting. I got a call from an editor that I used to work with the other day. And he was like, why aren't you on this show? Where are you? Because apparently, I guess my script notes to him were such an insight into what was happening during it. Like, he wasn't just getting footage and then getting a bunch of notes that say completed, 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 or you know, good take. And he was like, I have no clue what's happening on that set because your notes were always really in depth. And I mean, and what I also write in there, not just, you know, we did these lines through this lines. This was a good one. This wasn't right. This was a bad eye line. I also write down anything I hear the director say or the writers, and they're like, we like that take. Then I write, you know, writer preferred take. Or if the director was like, I only want to use this for this part of the scene, I write that kind of stuff down. Or even if I hear them giving notes to an actor and they're like, okay, I want this take to be the opposite of what you just did, or take this down a notch. So I'll make that note on that previous take that this was a little too hot, or they really liked this line of the take. So I write down as much of information I can give to the editor. That way they're not just watching everything and trying to piece it together, but they can at least kind of pull things and start seeing like, oh, if they like this reading of this, let me look for things at the similar level. Right.
Right. Right. And especially if you said, I remember the project we were working on, they were throwing the ball to the kid and there were spins and stuff. And I believe you noted, you know, the third spin is the best one. And I'm like, okay. And I look through and I'm like, oh yeah, it is. But it's like, that's a good place to start. You know, the notes, you look at it, obviously you look through the footage as an editor, but if you know, okay, this take is really good. Okay. Let me try to pay more attention to that. It just makes our job a lot easier. And I thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. I mean, my job is also to make sure that we don't forget shots too. And mm-hmm. you and I were talking this yes. morning because there was a shot that we didn't get and I can't believe that we didn't get it, but it's okay. I mean, it yeah. worked. Yeah. It was still yeah. fine. But yeah. my job is to ensure that. And sometimes I will ask for shots and my directors are like, no, we don't need that. Yeah. And then if I can't get the shot from the director, I try to go to the other people on the set, like the DP and or the writer or somebody, and just kind of whisper and see what they think. And if they're like, oh, yeah, we should get that shot, too. And I'm like, okay, I tried. Can you go try to get this shot? And then yeah. sometimes it works. You know, sometimes yeah. they just need another person other than me who tells them all things all day long. They just need right. someone else. And I don't care how I get what I need. I just
pitting mommy and daddy against each other.
Yeah.
It's really what it is.
Getting what you want. I got yeah. a trip to Disneyland doing that once. So
what, really?
Yeah, seventh grade.
Sweet.
It's a story.
How did you get into script supervision, by the way?
I used to work in theater back in Chicago, and I was a dramaturg. And if I spell that for everyone, dramaturg, it's a German word, that we did two things as a dramaturg working in theater. I did new play development with playwrights. And so I would they would give me their scripts, and I would look at them, look at structure, look at character, workshop them with actors, you know, and try to help them develop the best story that they are trying to tell.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of that is I used to do research for theater companies and actors and help make the show as solid as it needed to be and as true to form as it needed to be for what the author wanted it, you know, especially if you're doing a play about apartheid in South Africa. Right. What do the actors need to know
yeah.
about
yeah.
that, you know? And so, like, my job was to give them a little bit of information, like really condensed information of what do you need to know to make this show happen. And then I would take that information out to community groups and public schools and do lobby displays, and I would write program notes and do any kind of post-show discussion with the actors in front of the audience. So my job was to bridge what we did in rehearsal and what was on the page to the audience and make it applicable to their lives in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I used to do. And then when I decided to not pursue theater anymore in Chicago and I moved out here, I got into this world of movies that I was like, what is this world? Because I really had no interest in working in movies and film.
Mm-hmm.
But I needed a transition. I needed a challenge because I wasn't being challenged in Chicago anymore. And so I got it. So I moved here, and 2 weeks after I moved here, I started a course with Randy Feldman, who teaches down in Santa Monica. She'd been script supervisor for 35 years and teaches a ton of us. There's a whole crew of us that she just churns out, probably, you know, 20 to 50 script supervisors every year. And
that's impressive.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's a 6-week intensive course, and she teaches the very basics of like film all the way up to how to be a script supervisor and do all the continuity and all that stuff. And like we do fake little productions to try to get the idea of things. And so I took her course, and then I actually just had my 3-year anniversary of my very first day on set as a script supervisor, like this past Monday.
All right.
Congratulations.
A little 3-year anniversary.
And we have a cake for you. Happy birthday. Oh, never mind.
So I took her course, and then about maybe the last week of her course, I got an offer to do, because she works at a bunch of the film schools as well, talking mm-hmm. to directing students about what script supervisors do, how to utilize them, and just the basics of movie making from her point of view as a script supervisor. And so they often contact her for student films. It's like, hey, we know you have a bunch of new kids coming out on the block. Do they want to do a student film? So I got offered a student film about a week before we ended classes. And that was it. And this is the only job I've ever had in LA is being All a script right. supervisor. Wow. And I've been very fortunate.
That's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy when I think about it. And yeah, so I did that. And I think that my background in dramaturgy really, really helped because I'm so used to looking at structure and how to tell a story. My right. job as a script supervisor is how can we make sure we're still telling the story, getting all the shots we need to tell the story, making sure the actors know their lines to tell the story. You know, if there's something in the script that I don't understand because it's just doesn't make sense to me, I will bring it up to them, to a writer, if I feel comfortable with having that relationship, saying, I'm not quite sure I understand this. And sometimes they actually are like, oh, yeah, that's kind of weird. We should look at that. Or other yeah. times, you know, they explain it to me and then it makes sense. Right. But because of my history in that, I've had a number of directors who have found out that that's what I used to do. And they immediately hire me because they feel like it's a very good skill set to have. Knowing structure and understanding storytelling. And so I got my first little movie on a 10-day student film for the New York Film Academy. And then, you know, it's all referrals nice. And who you know and just applying yeah. for jobs. And one led to the other, to the other, to the other. And about a year after I did a bunch of short films and little movies, I ended up meeting some really great people who said, okay, it's time you join the union. And I had all my days. And they were like, as soon as you join, you call us. And I've been fortunate enough to be union and working in the wonderful world of television.
So is there a script supervisors union, like specifically, or is it?
There is. It's 871. And it's been around for, I think, like 40 or 50 years. And about 10 or 15 years ago, they also brought in teleprompters, art department coordinators,
that's right.
Yeah. accountants, production coordinators, APOCs. Like there's a kind of mishmash of us, right. but 871 is primarily script supervisors. And yeah, it's a big old group of us, and we just got a new building. We're getting a new union over in Burbank. It'll be very exciting.
Very cool.
But yeah, and so yeah, we have our union, and they cool. negotiate things for us.
That's always nice.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I need more money, but you can talk to that guy.
Yeah. What was your first kind of doing a big like a TV series like? Was that kind of a big leap from doing these little movies to now there's like a network behind this? And
It was something that I hadn't been prepared for in a way that I didn't understand. I didn't know how television worked versus movies. Like I was saying earlier, in movies, the directors are usually more a little bit more final say. Mm-hmm. And so are yeah. some of the producers, where in television, you have a showrunner who is more of the final say. And you have writers who have a little bit more input. So learning that workflow and who to ask things to, or, you know, it's like, is the way they're saying this line okay, or do we need to get it word perfect? You know, finding out who I worked for and how my job changed was something that I hadn't been prepared for. I didn't know. So the very first TV show I worked on was only day playing, covering for a friend of mine, going in and doing second unit I was on the last season of True Blood. Mm. And the good thing was is she brought me in for a couple days prior to show me how to work and how to kind of get that flow. And so that was really, really helpful to have her kind of give me a small tutorial on yeah. the show that she was having me to go in on. But then when I got my very first show for ABC over at Warner Brothers, that was me having to figure out how do I do this and how do I get what I need. And again, what is this workflow? Who's final say? And, you know, and I learned a lot through that because I was always used to having directors be final say. And I didn't know that that wasn't always the case on television. And so, so that was interesting. Like it was a brand new learning curve that I had to figure out because nobody had told me that that's what it was.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and look, and then the cool thing was about it is my editors were also on the lot all the time. And so I always went to editing and was like, how is it going? What are you hearing? You know, what are they liking? Mm-hmm. What are they not liking? And that was kind of great immediate feedback as well to say, oh, okay, well, the producers are really liking this or they're picking these kind of things. So,
right.
You know, I knew that I could take it back to my DP and say, hey, they really like these kind of shots and things like that. And then when I also knew what kind of takes and levels they were liking on the actors, that was something I could help with as well in making sure that they were getting the performances that they needed. You know, the writers right. knew as well. But it was just nice to. It's nice for the writers to also have a backup. Just like
yeah,
I'm the backup for the writers, and they're also my backup sometimes. So yeah, it was a learning curve. And again, like my job isn't different. It's just there's just different things that happen in different pecking order, I guess. Sometimes on a television show versus a movie.
Does it change when a new director comes in every week? I mean, do you have to adjust a little bit for their style, or is it pretty much?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm here all the time, so you just shut up and do what I tell you.
No, yeah, I mean, there's a sense in the fact that myself and the director of photography are always on set, so we're the ones that know what's happening all the time. The showrunner mm-hmm. knows what's happening all the time.
Yeah.
The writers and the staff writers and the directors, they aren't on set with us all the time, so. There's definitely a time where we have to all, you know, figure each other out how we work and adjust it and find the best way to communicate for everyone. Yeah, there are times when some directors I've worked with are very adamant about what they want and that's what we're doing. And if they don't want to get something, then we aren't getting it.
All right.
And there's other ones that rely very heavily on myself or the director of photography and, consult us on things and like, how do you guys normally shoot this or what, right. or is there anything that we're missing? And so it just depends on the director. Some of them are much more collaborative. Some of them aren't. Some of them are very clear in what they want. And some are, I mean, in even ones that I've worked with that are very clear and really, really awesome, it always baffles me. So not baffles, but it humbles me a little bit when they look at me and they're like, okay, did we get everything? Are we good? And I'm like, yeah, we're good. You know, but like, I just, I get excited.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, I get excited though. Yeah. I'm like, okay, you guys still care. Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I get turned down a lot all the time. And, yeah. and you can probably account for things when you see notes and it's like, okay, I asked for this shot and nobody wanted to give it to me. So I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, because there's only a certain amount I can do.
Right.
Once in a while, yeah. I remember there were times on shows where I would call the showrunner down and be like, I don't think this is that you're gonna like this. And then lo and behold, they come down and they look and they're like, nope, nope.
You know what? At least you said something, because if you didn't, then be like, why didn't you tell me?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, and that's what I do. I have to watch their back when they can't be around. And if there's something I really don't think that they're gonna like, you know, and like I will call them down, or I'll have the writer call them down and say, I just want to make sure that if we do this, they're going to be okay with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Got to cover your own ass.
Yeah. When I want to cover theirs, and you know, I also want a job again.
Yeah, so exactly.
That's, you know, those are those insurance policies of making sure that I also get to keep working and have, and that, you know, when the showrunner or the writers or whoever aren't on set, that they feel comfortable leaving me in charge, which is why, mm-hmm. like we were saying on Stitchers, I was the vice president of not moving on. Didn't always work. I wish it had worked a little bit more sometimes. But, you know, but again, like, I always told Jeff ahead of time, I was like, hey, this might be happening. And he was like, okay. And then sometimes we didn't get a shot. And I would have really liked it, and he would have too. And there were just, you know, there was just things that happen, and that's what it is.
Yeah.
But my job is to really just protect the show. really make sure that the show has everything it needs and that everyone's aware of what we need to do. It's such an interesting thing now that I think of the term script supervisor. I had one of the actors the other day asking me like what I actually did on set, because this is his first show, and he just thought that all I did was like feed lines to them when they needed it, and that was my job as a script supervisor. And he's like, I don't know, this is my first show, I didn't know what you do. And I was like, oh, well, I can bore you with that for like for an hour if you really want to hear it. But I gave him like a very brief synopsis, like I gave you guys this morning, and he was like, really? I was like, buddy, there is so much that I do back there, but all you know is that when you don't know a line, that's all you call it out and I give it to you. And that's what you think my job is. But not quite.
Have you run into many actors that think that? That's all your job is?
No, I feel like a lot of them kind of know that I do continuity and I do the dialogue and I take notes on things. Do they know that I help with making sure that we get all the shots we need, or that we keep the tone of the show, or we, you know, there or the other 1,200 things that happen behind Video Village? They don't necessarily know that. They just kind of know continuity and the notes and the dialogue. And that's fine. They don't, I mean, it's, how can I explain that? It's like, no, I also make sure that we get this shot sometimes, or we need this. I did it the other day with my DP. We were like, I think we need this shot. And like, he and I teamed up, got the shot that we wanted. The director like didn't really want it, but we just felt like we needed it.
Yeah.
You know, but, and you'll see it in the show and you'll be like, yeah, we did a good job.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I mean, I did that with one of my directors on this show. I was like, man, I don't know how we're transitioning into this like scene. I could not figure it out. And he was like, no, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. We're going to do this and this and this and this. And I was like, I don't know. And I was like, can we just get this insert shot just as a thing? I don't know why. I just feel like we need it. Just get it for me. And I was like, it takes 5 minutes to set up. And he's like, all right, fine. I'll just give it to you. And then he came back like 2 weeks later after the edit and said, thank you for getting that shot, because I had nothing to cut to. And that's what got us into that transition. And I was like, yeah, like fantastic. But the actors don't know that I do any of that.
Yeah.
You know, they, like I said, they know I do like just a couple things. And yeah, I don't know. How do I tell people that I do that? Because it's this is not something that you think that that's my job. I think that the script supervisor job has transitioned a lot from what it used to be back in the 40s and 50s, when it was just the script girl taking notes on what we were doing, like what each shot was and how many takes. I don't know when the transition happened to make sure that not only is it continuity and notes, but it's making sure shots happen and making sure we get wild lines or something, you know, off-camera dialogue. And I don't know when that transition happened.
I think it was Monday 3 years ago.
That was it. Just when I stepped on set.
Right.
So it's, but I think a lot of actors, you know, they don't always know what I do, but there's a decent amount of respect, but there's also this like air of mystique of like, what else happens behind those monitors that we don't know about?
Right.
And there's a lot that happens behind the monitors that we all have our conversations.
Have you ever thought about directing? Because I feel like you have, because you're kind of, not saying you're shadowing the directors, but you're there with them all the time. So you kind of see how they think and how they want to get shots and stuff. And would that be something that you would want to transition to or want to do?
For me personally, right now, no. I'm very happy as a script supervisor. I like my position. I like my responsibilities. There's a ton of script supervisors who do transition into directing. A lot of them in the past couple of years have really been transitioning, and it's great. I mean, because we are sitting there with them, we are helping them tell the story. A lot of people do use script supervising as one of those steps as well to get to that point, and it works, and they end up being great. I've had a number of script supervisors that I work with, who have been directors, and I always find it fascinating because I keep a running tally of how many setups that we do for every episode, and I always like to compare like who's got the most and who's got the least.
Interesting.
Who's got the most?
Oh boy.
And it's not a bad thing. having more setups isn't a bad thing, right?
Burn a couple of bridges here, no problem.
No, I'm not going to. No, but it's like, but what's interesting is like the script supervisors usually tend to have less setups than some people
that
because they kind of can see how shots are going to play and work out versus people who may just be directors.
Right.
It, you know, and then there's like people I've worked with who are producing directors or used to be EPs or used to be editors. And like, and I can see things like when I watch, when I see how many setups we're doing and what kind of shots they're getting, you can see where it comes from as well.
It's efficient because they know exactly what they want.
Exactly. So it's really interesting when I keep score of this, just for my own, like me and the DP, we just like to know like, oh, okay, so they did this many this week and this many this week. And I think I worked with one person that they did a couple episodes with us and they had the highest and the lowest, which was, I was like, oh, well, I guess one episode was more complicated than the other. But yeah, you know, directing's not anything I'm interested in now. A number of people have asked me to do it and pushed me to do it. I've had some people ask me to be a producer on some things as like a creative producer, you know, working with scripts and development and stuff like that because of my background in theater. But right now, like, I feel like I'm just happy where I'm at and I really want to keep doing it and getting better and learning more things and... I don't know. I'm happy where I'm at right now. Ask me in 5 years.
That's amazing because most people that come here is like, well, eventually I would like to.
I'd like to transition.
I'm going to do this thing. And we're like, you're never going to do that.
Way to be supportive.
You're not, that's kind of my my deal.
Of all the directors that you've worked with, who's your favorite?
Oh, if I say that, then people are going to get sad.
Who's one of your favorites?
One of your favorites.
And then you can list one of your least favorites, too, so that it's even.
Never.
Who did you hate?
Just despise.
Just
nope. Nope. I'm not going to play this game, guys.
Well, the favorite game. You can play a favorite game, right?
Or, okay, I guess, or if you don't want to name names, what were some of the
characteristics?
Some of the favorite or least favorites.
Shot lists. Shot lists are some of my favorite things. Okay. I have one director that I've worked with a number of times, and his shot lists are phenomenal. They are color-coded. They are from the side of lighting that you're going to get. So if we're shooting from, like, all of the shots from one side of the room will be in blue, and then the next three shots will be in green from a different side of the room. So it's all lighting direction.
Okay.
So he makes sure that, like, we do that.
Do you ever include those in the editor's notes? Because I would think those would be invaluable.
Some editors have asked to get them, and I, you know, if the director's cool with it, like, I totally give it to him. I can't remember the last thing that I did where an editor really wanted those notes. But yeah, once in a while, like, if they want them, and the director's cool with it, I'll happily send them over.
I would imagine with an ensemble cast, like, six or seven people on the stage, I'm sure those are really helpful, too.
Yeah.
But... I'm sorry for cutting you off.
Oh, no. I mean, and shot lists are really, they're good for everyone on the crew when we get them, and everyone knows exactly what we're doing, where, you know, we can all look at things and make sure that we're going to get all the shots we need, and we know where we're going for the rest of the day, and that's really great. So having that planning is really, really helpful
so it's
for everyone
in order.
On the crew.
It's not just like, here's the shots I want to get, but it's like, here's the wide, and then the medium, and then the close-up, and the... how the orders shoot it.
On that particular director's stuff, yes, it's very much lighting direction. But otherwise, sometimes, you know, it'll just say master, we're getting a 50-50, and then we're going into coverage, and blah, blah. Like, they'll just have the shots listed. That's totally fine, too. I am thrilled when I get a shot list, because it's one less thing that I have to bother the director about, because after a rehearsal of a scene, my first question is, tell me what we're getting. But if they give me a shot list, then I don't have to ask them because I already know. And then I can see if they're from the rehearsal. It's like, okay, we're getting all these shots. Is there anything that I think that we need otherwise? Mm-hmm. And so it's just one less thing for me to have to deal with the director, and they can continue directing and dealing with the other hundreds of things that they deal with.
Yeah.
So I really love a good shot list. Any shot list will do. Good ones are even better.
Nice.
Being, you know, somebody who... One of my favorite directors has been someone who knows how to speak to the crew, knows how to speak to the writers, knows how to speak to the actors. and communicates really, really effectively. And you don't find that a lot. You find a lot that are really good with actors, or you'll find some that are really good with crew. But finding some that can do all of it is so, so great. You know, that has the language, the crew language versus the actor language. And then being collaborative and listening and, you know, knowing that everyone on the crew has, if they have a question or they have an idea, it probably comes from a really good place, you know, like wanting to make sure this is going to be the best thing.
Right.
And so the directors who will listen to it, they can totally turn it down and say, no, I don't want to do that. But just to listen and think about it and be collaborative in that way, mm-hmm. that's something that I know as a crew member, all of us really value. I don't know if it's just the fact of being heard or just, or having that option of like, hey, this is something that I think would be good here, or do you want me to tilt up from this and grab this insert at the same time? You know, if the camera operator says that to a director, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, like, and if they're willing to do it. So that's something that I really love. And then, of course, you know, just people who are pleasant to be around. Yeah. I always like that too.
Pleasant people are cool.
Yeah.
I like to make sure that Video Village is just as much, you know, that we're still having a good time making a movie or a TV show. I know it's a business, but it's a fun business. And we're very lucky that we get to work in it and do these like really cool things all day and then get paid for it.
You get to play with make-believe, you know?
That explains the unicorns.
It's a very magical place.
You had to bring those up?
I'm sorry. I just thought
if it wasn't him, it was
such a cool, like, you show up at Village and it's just a, you know, normally it's just monitors, but now it's like the, like a little girl's bedroom exploded all over this place. It's awesome.
First time I was on set and you were in Video Village, Andrew's like, that's a script supervisor, and she likes unicorns.
you came on to Stitchers at one point?
Came on a couple times.
Well,
it's just, like, it's like, that's your office.
It is my office.
Like, you know, people in normal offices get to, like, put up pictures of their kids or whatever, and it's like, your office is something that changes from day to day, in a sense, and, you know, it gets thrown onto a truck and taken somewhere else, so it's... make it your own.
You know, and it is. Video Village is my little home. I'm the only one there all the time.
Yeah.
You know, unless the DP is with me at Village. And if they have a separate Village, then that's their home and they can do whatever they want to it. But, like, on my very first TV show that was all mine, my Video Village, I ended up collecting little things from each episode and each director that I would put on it. So by
trophies.
The end...
Are you a serial killer?
Nice.
Yeah, and I just collected things like that they would give me, or funny things that we talked about, and I would put them on Video Village. So by the end of the show, it was this wonderful little memorabilia of everything that we did on the show.
Yeah.
On the Unicorn Village, which you're so kindly bringing up. What that was there was an episode of a show I did where one of the characters had this onesie that was a unicorn, and I made a comment how cute it was, and then all of a sudden it showed up on my chair. They let me keep it, and then I also made a flag to go on the side of Video Village, because once in a while you can't find Video Village.
That's
so
true.
So I put a flag on it that said Camp Kelly. And on the other side, someone had drawn a unicorn as the mascot for Camp Kelly. So at least I always knew where it was. It was this, like, yellow flag with a purple unicorn, and I knew where Video Village was. And so between that and this other little unicorn that showed up, I brought the flag to set on Stitchers, so I knew where Video Village would be. And, man, my crew went nuts with that. And by the end of that show... they had bought me shirts, hats, makeup that was unicorn themed, toys beyond belief, and I had like 35 unicorns, and I had shirts and hats, and I had like lipstick that had a unicorn on it, or a unicorn named lipstick. And so once in a while, I would bring out. Like, they weren't always all out at Video Village. I also had a bag that one of the writers gave me with a unicorn on it that they all used to live in. Like, all these little stuffed animal things. And I should give you guys a picture, and you can post it along with yeah. with the thing, and you can see the insanity that was Village once in a while. So only like once a week, I would bring out all the kids to hang out and sit at Video Village, you know. And but it was funny because I had like, you remember all those little rubber ducky yeah. unicorns I had?
Yeah.
On that show, if you haven't seen the show Stitchers, one of the actors has to get into this water tank every episode. And she would be in the tank for 3 to 6 hours when we shot those. And so I would go and give her a couple of the little rubber duckies to play with. And she would just sit there and play with them and squirt people because she got bored sitting in the tank in between takes, you yeah. know? Right. And I mean, I have to say, like, that made Video Village a lot more fun just to show up and, like, see all these stupid unicorns. And it was like a joke that just never went away, and I just adopted it. And, you know, if the crew wants to give me presents, I'm not going to say no. And I'm going to keep them there and love them. And I always snuck them into shots if I could.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. There, I had a couple of unicorns that were small little figures that were, you know, like one or two inches. And I used to put them on the set once in a while just to see if anyone would find them. And the actors knew they were there because they yeah. were like, oh, I want the purple one today. Yeah. So we used to match them to Tesh's shirt once in a while
because
he had orange or purple. So I used yeah. to switch out his was orange or purple. But yeah, so the unicorns at Village. This village I have right now on my show, Twilight Sparkle is there.
Okay.
She's hanging out. Oh, there was a unicorn on something in art department that, again, made a comment about what happens the next day. It shows up in a frame. I was like, oh, my goodness.
It's begun.
Yeah. It's not nearly as crazy as it was on Stitchers. Yeah, I'll give you guys a photo of what that
It's important
like.
To remember that you just made a comment. It's not like you showed up on your first day with a box full of unicorn stuff no. and was like, this is how I roll, guys. We definitely encouraged it.
You did.
So.
I mean, there's nothing better than, you know, getting a text message from your boss on, like, a Sunday. And it's like, what size shirt do you wear? Because I just found something you need. And then I show up on Monday, and it's like a unicorn zombie t-shirt, you know? And I was like, thanks, Jeff.
Well, even remember when we got back from Mount Whitney and we went to Kmart.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got to take a picture of this real quick and send it to someone. It was a bicycle helmet with a unicorn face on it.
And what's so funny is, like, yeah. I actually, like, don't have a unicorn thing, but I've just kind of adopted it. Like, I've just adopted it, and I'm fine with it. And, like, if we have to really talk about what I like Snoopy. Oh, and,
nice.
That's my deal. But I have a bunch of unicorns now, and you know what, I love them all, and I'm not gonna leave them out for orphanage, but no. I just felt like Video Village was funnier and happier to be around, because you like yeah. you know, when times get stressful on set, especially dealing with, you know, when you start losing time and stuff, then you just had unicorns to play with. I had actors that would come over and they would look at my little pony unicorns. And if they were having a bad day, they were like, can I just take this really quick? And they would go and sit there and, like, just comb the tail and kind of just deal with things. Like, it was wow. so funny. I used to come back to Village once in a while. Oh, my God. There was one director on Stitchers that we had this, like, really intense day doing the rave scene.
Oh, yeah.
And I came back to Village, and he was holding one of my unicorns, and I took this photo of him, and it was, like, the saddest thing, because it was just this, like, super intense day with all these lights flashing, and he just was, like, sitting there with a unicorn. It was great. Like, they just, I don't know, they just made people laugh. Like, yeah. what else is it? What are you supposed to do? You
gotta lighten the mood somehow.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm still a professional. I still yeah, did my course. Job. They didn't yeah. get off the hook no matter what. But the unicorns were there for people to have fun with if they needed it. And that was that's something that I like about my video villages, is that they're meant to also know that, like, this is a cool job that we have, and let's remember that.
Yeah.
I played Snoopy and You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, so.
Whoa. Oh. Are you gonna see the Peanuts movie?
The end.
I hope to. I hope to. I've heard some good things that they've kept the integrity
good.
Of it,
yeah.
which is important to me.
Yeah.
So I hope to see.
I wonder
it.
What the script supervisor's job was on that movie.
Mm.
Do they have
animation does have script supervisors. I know, like, the Pixar people, I think they have script supervisors that do stuff like that, but I don't know how that world works. I'd be more than happy to find out.
All right. Okay.
If I ever do, I'll be sure to update you guys. But yeah, I don't know.
Be good to know.
For anyone that wants to be a script supervisor, do you have any advice for them? Like, take a class?
Well, yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing, because that's not the kind of thing... I mean, I know you learn a lot on set, but it would be scary to show up on, like, a TV show and be like, first day, I guess we'll figure it out. And then you, $2 million later, you're like, well, that day's fucked, because I didn't do anything right. Like... So yeah, the class seems like an awesome thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of script supervisors who have also just, you know, found other script supervisors and had them as a mentor, and then those mentors train them. And that's, you know, and I'm sure that that works for very well, and I think those people have been doing good things. For me, the class was really great because it was just the basics of everything, getting the workflow down, knowing, you know, the paperwork of it, along with the creative part of looking at things and finding it. The way that Randy structures her class is just fantastic. And I would highly, highly recommend it, just because it gives you a really good base point to start. You won't walk onto a set the first day and learn bad habits, you know, like, because there were people that had been on set as script supervisors in my class, and they were unlearning habits that they had just gotten used to or thought were fine. So I think that that is really helpful, just to go in and get that base. Because I'll be honest, when I walked onto my first set, I was like, what? Like, you know, it was like everything I had just learned for the last 6 weeks had gone completely out the window. And then probably like halfway into the day, I figured it out. And I was like, oh, this is what we're doing? I was like, okay, like, I got it. But it was like, you know, you can only do so much with what you're trained with, and then you got to figure it out for yourself as well. So I would say that the class is super, super helpful.
And what's her name again?
Randy Feldman. Okay. She does a thing called Cinema Workshops. If you just type in Cinema Workshops Script Supervisor, it'll be the first thing that comes up. She is fantastic. I go back and I talk to her class like once every class that she has about my workflow and getting into the union and just what my experiences have been like. And I've worked with her on her book too. When I took her class, the book that she taught us from was about 800 pages. We've since gotten it down to about 500. So that's good.
That's crazy.
Wow. You know, well, just there was multiples of information in there, and I was like, let's fix this. Let's like make it one document of information versus three of kind of similar information. So, yeah. Yeah, so her class, though, is really, really fantastic. And then, you know, I would say that the most important thing, and this goes for anyone in the film industry starting out, is, like, you know, you don't say no to a lot of things right away, because it's all a learning experience. And you always be nice to everyone, not because they can get you your next job. Yes, they can. But also, you can learn a lot from people. You know, and ask questions and don't be afraid to be wrong. All those typical things that, like, we're supposed to do in life. You know, if you make a mistake, just own up to it and deal with whatever happens after that. But, you know, I started out and I did a bunch of student short films. And then I gave myself a goal after, like, 10 student films. I was like, okay, now I want to get paid for these.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't work for less than, you know, X amount. And then I was like, okay, now I did a certain amount for that much money. And then I gave myself 5 at the next level of money. And then after that, I was like, okay, no more student films. Now I'm only going to, you know, apply for jobs or take jobs that are an actual film or something. Like, I gave myself goals and didn't regret saying no to those other things, because I felt like if I didn't get out of them, I wouldn't progress and I wouldn't go further. So, you know, knowing that I was gonna have those goals, I budgeted for it as well to make sure that I could still live. Yeah. And if I wasn't gonna be working, you know, 1 week because I didn't want to do something for free, I knew that that was the choice I was making, because I wanted to make sure that people started taking me seriously as I continued to grow and get better. And like I said, that goes for anyone in this industry, is setting those goals and making sure that you have targets that you're gonna get better. But being a script supervisor, just be friends with everyone on set. You're there to back them up and you're there to help them. You know, don't call people out on set. If there's a problem with something, go talk to that department and let them handle it and let them be the hero about it. I don't need the glory. You know, I mean, how many times have I told a director, hey, I think we need this shot? And then they go get the shot and come back and it's a great shot that they got and they're happy they got it. I don't care if anyone knows that I told them that they needed it. Yeah. Like, they come back and they're like, okay, I'm totally taking credit for that. And I was like, great. Whatever, like, I don't care. You know, and like, if there's problems with, like, there was one episode I did on a show where the nail polish was a problem. It wasn't the right color. I don't know why they changed it halfway through, but they did. And I went up to that department and I was like, hey, guys. And they were like, oh my God, you're right. And I let them take care of it and like call, you know, they're like, oh, we need to take care of something, you know, and I try to do that. I try not to call out people unless it's like in the middle of a take and it's like, oh my God, I need this property set somewhere or something like
that. Well, that's your world, that's essentially.
Right.
The like continuity of things.
Yeah, it is. And but I try to, you know, let every department do their job to the best of their abilities and not make anyone look bad in front of anyone else. I'd rather go have a private whisper conversation and say, hey guys, let's take care of this really quick. Mm-hmm. And then they get the glory. I don't, it's not about anything for me. Like, I just want to make sure that we get what we need. You know, I know it. And as long as they know that I have their back, then that's all that's important is that, you know, that they know that I'm willing to work and be collaborative. And then that's when they feel comfortable telling me, hey, I need to fix this or something. And then I can help be a bridge in other places for them as well. Or they feel comfortable saying like, hey, this wasn't right. And I'll just make a note about it. And then we move on. But like, it just being as a script supervisor, because I deal with every department and the actors and the writers and the EPs, it's I have to be able to communicate with everyone and know and make sure that they know that I'm there for them in every possible way. And I'm only there to do my job. And if you're, you know, if there's like a script supervisor that wants to yell and scream and call people out, you know, like that's just not going to garner the kind of respect that our position has to have. We have to be the person on set who is calm and collected and organized and make sure, you know, I've found that I've been told by other people that if a script supervisor is the one like going a little crazy on set, like chaos kind of starts going ensuing on set.
Yeah.
But if the script is like really calm and chill and, you know, deals with things and handles it really well, then it's amazing how that can change and affect the set. So I would just say that, you know, being just communicative and letting the other departments do their job and just letting them know you're there and to help them out, like that is huge because it just gives, it also shows that you respect them and that you, like there's so many things that go wrong all the time. But if I called out, you know, the props department for something not being reset, you know, it's like that doesn't make them feel good and it makes them not like me. So if I can just say, hey, I need to get this reset or something, or I'll even like have an AD go do it. I'll just call the AD over and say, hey, tell props we need this. Mm-hmm. And then they can go deal with it. And like that way the director doesn't have to deal with it because they have enough to deal with. I really find that that's been really, really effective in the way that I work with people. And I think that's like most important is just being kind of like that positive energy that can also be a team player and know that you like, I don't need the glory.
Yeah.
I don't need it. I'm just happy when I'm just, I don't care how I get my shot as long as I get it.
Yeah.
Enough people want to get the glory as it is.
Exactly. I don't need it. I'm not paid for glory. I'm just paid to hang out and be at Video Village. Sweet.
With your unicorns.
Yeah.
Are you on Twitter?
No.
Okay.
No.
Andrew, you are, though.
I'm on Twitter.
I am, too. What's your handle?
Mine's The Real Zuber.
And I'm JJGeiger711. You guys can follow us.
Nadav's on Twitter, too. Remember Nadav?
Yeah, Very Nadav Show?
Yeah.
Oh, I got it right.
And our show's on Twitter at Early Call Time.
Yep. And you can email us at earlycalltime@gmail.com.
If you have questions for Kelly, you should email them to us.
Yeah, we could pass them along.
And then she'll answer all of your questions.
I will answer them.
She'll come over to your house and make you a pie. And
that I will not do. But I will happily answer any questions that anyone has.
Okay.
That's very nice. Thank you.
Yeah, anytime. Mm. I always will.
You can call us.
Yeah, 267-225-CHAT.
Where you can text and leave a voicemail. We'll play it on the air.
We will.
Yeah, you can contact us.
We're all over the place, man. Right. Instagram, we've got like 3 photos on Instagram.
Pretty much sounds like you guys don't have a life, is what it's what you're telling me.
You're right.
It's
you're
true.
Right, Kelly.
You figured us out. Aww.
Yeah. We can end the podcast now.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yes,
thanks for coming on.
Yeah. I had a very good time, and it was nice to actually have a conversation with you.
Versus just over my notes.
Oh, yeah. Hey, nice notes. Send.
Later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, well, without further ado,
listen to the outro.
And that's a wrap. Didn't get your fill at Craft Services and you want more? Check out earlycalltime.com for more podcasts and information pertaining to the ever-growing entertainment industry. And remember to tell your friends about us via Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.